I'm Bill Littlefield.
It's official number 73. The greatest regular season in NBA history now belongs to the 2016 Golden State Warriors.
As of Wednesday night, the Golden State Warriors have won more regular season games than anybody else. Very cool. I think we might have a chance to celebrate them during this week's Three Stories You Should Know. Joining me this week in this very room are Don Van Natta Jr., investigative reporter for ESPN, and Kevin Blackstone, Washington Post sports columnist and regular on ESPN's Around the Horn. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation.
All right, Don, I understand that you were faced with a dilemma on Wednesday night, and one horn of that dilemma was, in fact, the aforementioned Warriors. Tell us about that.
Well, it was really this rare collision of two must-see TV events. You had the Golden State Warriors trying to be the best regular season team of all time, going for their 73rd win. And simultaneous to that, Kobe Bryant was playing his last game. And ESPN had that problem of which game do you put on the main network? And they decided to put the Warriors, the uncertainty of the Warriors, on the main network, and Kobe was put on ESPN2, which a lot of the Kobe fans did not appreciate. It just was this great sort of dilemma for a sports fan. Do you go with the uncertainty of the Warriors and trying to make history, or do you go the nostalgia way to watch Kobe try to put up as many points as he could? I watched both, which I think a lot of fans did. That's the cop-out. But what was really remarkable, guys, is that it was really split down the middle when you look at the ratings. There were 3.6 million people that watched the Warriors and 3.4 million that watched Kobe. So fans really split down the middle between that uncertainty versus nostalgia sweepstakes.
Kevin, assuming you went one way or the other, which way did you go?
I went with the Warriors because that was the easiest television option for me. Mm-hmm. But I tuned out after halftime because they were already up, I think, 70 to 50 at the half. So what you knew was going to be a coronation really turned out to be a coronation. I'm sorry I missed Kobe's performance because Kobe went out as we knew him, which was must-watch TV, scoring 60 points. And I read Bill Plaschke's really solid column on what Kobe did in that final game. And I'm kicking myself that I've missed it, so I'm going to have to wait to see it on ESPN Classics, which doesn't even exist anymore.
But we miss nothing these days. Everything's up there somewhere.
Somewhere on YouTube.
Whenever you want to watch it.
I will unearth it, absolutely.
Absolutely. It'll be simple. If I'd been watching television that night, and I hope that you'll allow me to continue in this discussion when I acknowledge that I wasn't watching television that night, I would have watched the Warriors because basketball's a team game. I would have watched to see whether that team could have done something no team had ever done before. Kobe Bryant's performance obviously was extraordinary, but an individual performance in a team game is only that, and I would have gone with watching the team. Can I still continue to do my job, or am I now?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. I'm glad. Thank you, Don. Kevin, you're up next, and I understand that, like a lot of fans this week, you've been thinking about Jackie Robinson.
Yeah, I always think about Jackie Robinson. April 15th has become Jackie Robinson Day, and it really has become very conflicting for me because I think that baseball has done a marvelous job at marketing Jackie Robinson over the last 20 years. And in doing so, unfortunately, I think, kind of whitewashing the entire history of the segregation and reintegration of baseball. There's a generation of people now who've come up that don't really understand the full scope of Jackie Robinson. Thankfully, we just had Ken Burns do a two-part piece, which I think really peels back some of the layers to the complexity of the Jackie Robinson issue. But I just think, unfortunately, it gets lost in the celebration, the pomp, the circumstance.
The cliche.
The cliche, and everyone wearing 42. And Jackie Robinson has become a mythological figure almost now, and how he's constructed through the media and through Major League Baseball almost makes him unrecognizable to me.
One of the things I was really struck by from the Ken Burns documentary is Rachel.
That's Rachel Robinson, Jackie's widow.
I mean, She really carried it.
The backing that she did of him and his quest was so important. You talk about whitewashing. I heard so little about her anytime you'd hear about Jackie Robinson. So I was really touched that she was able to really get the due that she deserves for how much she had to do with everything Jackie Robinson was able to do.
She was apparently the impetus behind the making of the documentary.
Right.
Ken Burns said that she was after him after he did the long, you know, multi-part baseball documentary. Hey, come on, isn't it time to do one that really centers on Jackie Robinson? And eventually he finally did. I thought also something that surprised me a little bit about it was how reluctant some of his teammates were. We hear the cliche about Pee-wee Reese putting his arm around Jackie Robinson's shoulder and saying, you know, you're my guy.
And now we know that didn't happen.
And no, well, disputed at least, at the very least. But beyond that, there were guys on the team, on the Brooklyn team, who just hoped maybe it would go away.
Right.
And it obviously didn't. And Robinson was, I mean, you know, as Hamlet said of his father, he was a man, take him for all in all. We will not look upon his like again, but he was a man. And I think it's important to remember that.
And I think when you talk about Jackie Robinson as a man, I think one of the interesting things to me is that he was, he had to accept self-emasculation as a man.
At least for a year.
At least for a year. And in a lot of ways for much of his baseball career, because he could not fully participate in a game in which brushback pitches mean you get up and you challenge the pitcher, in which hard slides into the bag means you get up and challenge the person who slid into you. He couldn't participate in that part of baseball because of the pact that he had cut with Branch Rickey, the Dodgers, and baseball in general. And it wasn't until a year, I believe, after Jackie Robinson retired in 1957, where Larry Doby threw a punch at Art Dittmer, a pitcher who had knocked him into the dirt. And some people wrote, as did Shirley Povich at the time, that that was an emancipatory act for the black athlete, that he could finally become a full participant in the American sports scene. So I think much of that gets lost in the Jackie Robinson Day story.
The other thing that I was really struck by, Kevin, is even on the day when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, how few journalists wrote about it, even took note of it.
Right.
You know, you talk about now 42 and the way Major League Baseball has whitewashed the history. I saw that Dick Young story. He doesn't mention a word about Jackie Robinson in the story about that game.
You would think that an editor would go, excuse me, Dick, we might want to move this up a little bit.
Exactly. Talking about
it's only been 60 years.
I mean, burying the lead, you know?
Wait a minute, Dick. This fellow here looks a little different from everybody else. Isn't it great that we can have some fun with this
it
now?
Is.
At least we've reached the point where we can have some fun with this. I'm not sure how I'm going to top any discussion of Jackie Robinson, but I'll give it a shot. No matter how many more majors Jordan Spieth wins over the course of his career, and he's only 22, so it's likely to be a long career, some people are going to remember him as the guy who should have won one more, the Masters in 2016. Five shots ahead, nine holes to go, and his second nine includes a quadruple bogey, which is not the way guys on the PGA Tour are supposed to play. All right, ask a lot of people about Tiger Woods. They'll say, oh, yeah, he could have been the greatest golfer ever if he hadn't blown up his life. It's golf's version of Bill Buckner. Mention that ballplayer's extraordinary 22-year career in the major leagues, and somebody, maybe everybody, is going to say, oh, yeah, I saw him let that ground ball go through his legs in the 1986 World Series. I don't know enough about human nature to understand why it works that way, but it does, and I've gotten to the point where I wish it didn't. Is it simply that people need their star athletes to fail as much as they need them to succeed? What do you think, Don?
I think so. Look, Jordan Spieth had four birdies in a row going into the end of that front
right.
nine.
Right.
None of us do that. Nobody does that. He was five strokes ahead, as you said. Then he did bogey, bogey, and then that quadruple bogey, which we've all done. And we can all relate. And he just looked.
That's why we needed to happen.
That's why we needed it to happen. He just looked unstoppable. And it made him human. It made him, I think, accessible to golf fans. The way he reacted in Butler Cabin at the green jacket ceremony, he looked so grim, clearly unhappy. I don't know at 22 if I would have behaved as well as he did. And so I think it's going to make him even more popular and even more of a compelling figure, because we now want to watch how he's going to come out of this.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the appeals of golf, right? That you can look at it and you can say at one point, that guy just did what I did over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Or I think I can do that anytime you get a birdie or even par at your local Muni course, right? So I think it was a very humanizing a very humanizing moment. The other thing is that, you know, memory is a funny thing. 22 years old. So what are we going to think of Jordan Spieth 10, 15, 20 years from now? Do we remember that Arnold Palmer in 1966 in the U.S. Open had a 7-stroke lead going into the back nine and blew it? No, I don't think we remember that. We remember Arnold.
Well, you remember it, but most people
don't. No, I
don't
either. I had to read it.
But, you know, the other thing about Spieth, which was extraordinary, is after that quadruple bogey on 13, he had a birdie.
Sure did.
And that says a lot about, I think, you know, his toughness, his resolve, and what we can expect from him in the future.
Yeah.
I like this. You guys have taken what I thought was a relatively simple point and turned it into something that's genuinely philosophical. And that's terrific. I enjoyed that. My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been Kevin Blackistone and Don Van Natta Jr. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.